So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Revue.
Hello, everybody. John Hedstrom here. And I've decided to put a little Christmas wrestling song together for you. For those loyal fans out there who endure hours and hours of broadcasts. Because, yes, it's still real to them, damn it. I affectionately call this song The Wrestling Show Was Horrible, and I certainly hope you all enjoy it. Merry Christmas to everybody. The wrestling show was horrible. I don't know why I watched. The Divas had an awful match where many were botched. 3 hours stolen from me like a low blow to the crotch. Oh, fake titles of silver and gold, silver and gold. Oh, fake titles of silver and gold. Oh yes, there's four verses. Here we go. The wrestling show was horrible. The crowd cheered very loud. Too bad the guy they wanted there was clearly not allowed. His pipe bomb scared his bosses so and made his fans so proud. Oh, fake titles of silver and gold, silver and gold. Oh, fake titles of silver and gold. Bear with me, we're halfway there. The wrestling show was horrible. The network took a hit. The inconsistent streaming gave the fans an awful fit. A terrible decision as their heads were full of it. Oh, fake titles of silver and gold, silver and gold. Oh, fake titles of silver and gold. Last one, folks. Let's take this one home. May all you wrestling fans be well as presents you do buy. Perhaps a t-shirt for your friend, he is a waiting guy. He likes that Pollock dude as well, with that I say goodbye. Oh, fake titles of silver and gold, silver and gold. Oh, fake titles of silver and gold.
And with that, we welcome everybody to the second annual Revue Away Christmas show. It's Christmas morning with John Pollock and Wei Ting.
Yay!
Merry Woo. Christmas, Wei.
Ow, ow, ow!
Wei is here in his pajamas, his slippers. It's a very nice bathrobe with your initials in it, no less. WT.
Yeah.
Is that a Wu-Tang bathrobe or is it a Wei Ting bathrobe?
Yeah, it's both. Anyway, thank you, John. This is very exciting. I mean, I don't really do anything for Christmas, typically. But this
has your Christmas spirit not risen over the last year after last year's Christmas show?
No.
No, it's
really.
Still kind of flatlines.
It's about the same. But it's cool. It's great. Gives me something to do. Gets me up in the morning.
I guess it's just it's a day off for you, the 25th of December most years.
Yeah, yeah.
But, well, now it's not because we've got a show to do on Christmas morning.
No, who needs days off?
No. No days off. Wei Ting and John Pollock. Well, thank you, everyone, for downloading this show. If you're a true fan, you're listening to this on Christmas morning as your opening presents. What better show to put on as you... Anyone can throw on Christmas music as you open up gifts with your family, but true fans want to hear John Pollock and Waitin.
I like to think of downloading our podcast and clicking, double-clicking the podcast as a form of opening a present.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
It's a look at the length of this show. I mean, you have... It's going to be a lengthy one.
In the future, all gifts will be downloads. We will have no more physical gifts. So get used to it. Everything will be... I mean, who gives... You can't give music away anymore. You can't buy music for somebody. Nobody has a CD.
And I hate that come Christmas, because my two major items that I would always ask people for Christmas, when my parents wanted a list or something, I would list off CDs I wanted, DVDs I wanted, and books I wanted. And now, all of that is digital. I don't want physical books anymore. I want stuff on my Kindle. I want music on iTunes. And I want... And movies. I mean, I never want more DVDs.
No. You want a lot of things, it seems.
Well,
you just, I want.
Well, I give more than I receive.
Okay. But, I mean, you know, have you heard of this thing called the 3D printer? You seen that?
No.
Well, it's a real thing. You actually haven't heard of it?
I haven't heard of it. What is it?
I've actually seen it in action. It's like they take like strands of plastic, and there are printers now that they made. It's still, the technology is still very much in its infancy, but you know, it essentially prints out a real mold of plastic for you.
Huh.
And I think I saw a video recently of a guy or a dog wearing like prosthetics printed out from a 3D printer.
What? This sounds crazy.
It's real.
Yeah, I can't believe I've never heard of this. 3D printer.
What I mean is, you know, in the future, you won't have to buy anybody anything from a store now. Everything we receive will be received from the internet.
Well, look at this. First thing that comes up is 13 cool things you can 3D print right now with a dog with prosthetics. Yeah. This was only put up 4-5 hours ago.
Maybe that's when I saw it.
Man, you're on top of stuff.
I am.
Three-dimensional printing is more precise, widely available. This is all shit you can print off, like a ring?
I guess. I mean,
your own guitar?
Really?
No.
You can't print out a whole guitar. Probably just, like, the neck or... Anyway, this is stupid. We got a lot to get
through. These are some of the toys. Maybe someone out there got a 3D printer for Christmas and they don't know what to do with it. And now they can give their dog legs.
I don't think I'd want one right now. Now it kind of really... Nice, you got me. Well, I just said it once. I didn't say it multiple times. But, I mean, now it sucks. Like, it's like getting a... Who would want the first generation of computers? I wouldn't want... I don't have all that space in my place just to what? I'd have a word processor?
Those first VCRs. I mean, people paid hundreds...
No, it's ridiculous.
For the first generation of anything, it's always something. You gotta wait.
Wait, maybe 15 years.
Remember when 3D televisions and,
Oh, they're still around. And now it's all about 4K.
That's the new thing. Get
the 4K TV. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. We don't even shoot in 4K.
Like, all these, outlets we're talking about, we're gonna shoot in 3D now? I really don't feel 3D took off.
No.
And TVs were going for just ridiculous amounts. 3D TVs, get in on the ground floor.
Yeah.
No thanks.
So if you bought a 3D TV on, or if you received one on Christmas, then you're an idiot.
Give it away. Get a 3D printer.
Yeah. Tell exactly. 3D printing.
I went to a Future shop once just to try out a 3D TV, and I put the glasses on. And as soon as I did that, I'm like, no one will ever get behind this.
The idea of putting
glasses on to watch TV. This will not work. This will 1,000% not work.
For me, like, I mean, I hate 3D movies. When I go to the theater and I have to watch a movie in 3D because it's opening weekend and that's all they show. Because I wear glasses. I got to wear these glasses on top of my glasses. And it's... You don't wear any glasses, but...
No.
Imagine wearing two pairs of glasses.
I would hate it. I hate wearing the normal glasses. I just find they're irritating. It's plastic against your scalp.
Yeah. Glasses on top of glasses, and what if it was like really bright outside? And you have to wear the sunglasses on top of that.
Oh my god.
What if you're in the middle of a science experiment? You gotta wear goggles on top of your glasses on top of your glasses?
We are not meant for a 3D world. That's it.
It's terrible. Terrible.
The Nintendo Entertainment System. 2D. They had it right.
2D. That's happy with 2D.
I agree with you.
Oh, before we go, we should, the beautiful sound.
We're not done yet.
Well, I mean, before we continue, is what I meant. We should thank Headstrom.
Headstrom.
Headstrom for the beautiful song that you heard at the top of this program.
Yes, we heard that. We're like, this is how we're going to kick off the Christmas show. So a solid contribution, and that will come up later during our song contest where we're going to go through the Christmas songs submitted on the message board.
Was it the best one? I don't know.
We're going to find out. We have not listened to the others yet. We are going to listen to them on the air and critique them as they happen, as you will be hearing them for the first time, the same as us.
I really liked Headstrom's entry, though. I mean, really good lyrics. We were, like, listening, and we're like, wow, this is actually really good. We thought they'd all suck, but actually, wow, this guy actually put some good effort into this. I like the arpeggiator. Do you like, you know, when like, the music?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very snobby when it comes to my arpeggiatory.
Exactly.
Yeah. We also, a late submission who made it in just hours before the deadline, Gaurav.
Uh-oh.
He's back.
There's that to look forward to, I guess.
So that's all coming up. And it's the second annual Review Away Royal Rumble.
Uh-oh.
Some surprise entrants.
The numbers were drawn.
We did all of the drawings at random. We hired Price Waterhouse as our official third party to draw the numbers as an outside outlet. The numbers have been drawn. And way I think it's best to just start off, and in the immortal words of Howard Finkel, find out who drew number one. Away, our first entrance in the Review Away Christmas Rumble. How better to start than Dan the Mouth Lavransky with us here on Christmas morning. Mouth, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you guys, too. I got number one. Wow.
You drew number one.
It'd be tough.
Yeah, you got to go Broadway here to win this entire thing.
Exactly.
How is Dan Lavransky's Christmas? What a Mouth, you travel away for Christmas every year, but
yeah, that's right. Actually, yeah, I'm at my mother's house in good old Simcoe down near Lake Erie, where it's we have no snow. It's all green. It's a total green Christmas, which my mother will be disappointed with. She likes to have snow on Christmas Day. She doesn't care about the rest. In fact, she doesn't want any snow the rest of the winter, but she really wants it on Christmas Day. So that's a little bit of a bummer, but everything else will be great. I'm looking forward to the big turkey dinner and just lots of lying around and probably maybe watching some New Japan World while I relax after dinner. You know,
of course.
That's my new obsession, I have to tell you guys. I'm really, really, really digging New Japan World. I just think it's such an awesome service, and it's so great to get to see all, not just the current stuff, but watch all the old stuff, too. Like, and you know, if you're not into Japanese wrestling and you've heard us talk about it for years, you should really check it out because it's so good. And you can not only do you see the new stuff, but you can learn the history too.
What stuff has stood out for you that you've been watching? Anything going back? You know, because I don't know if people are aware, but Dan Lavransky used to have quite the network of tape distribution back about a decade or so ago. It was called Dr. Mouse Stiff History of Japanese Wrestling. And
wow,
it was my first, before I even ordered tapes online, you were my first hookup, you and W.H. Park, to get Japanese tapes. And Mouth would just put compilations of like the best matches. And it was like, you must have had like 30 different versions of these compilation tapes that you would distribute.
Yeah, I did have quite a few there. Yeah, I managed to find a really cool little Japanese store here in Toronto, and they had someone in Japan taping both New Japan and All Japan. This is back in the 90s. And yeah, I would just go down to the store about once a month, and they would get the new tapes of the TV. And it was and that was at a super hot period. You had, you know, Kawada and Kobashi, Misawa, Akiyama, all those great guys in All Japan. And then you had the super hot New Japan, especially the juniors with Liger and Otani and Kanemoto and Takaiwa. And, you know, Dr. Wagner would come in from Japan. And, yeah, So I've always been interested. I've watched a lot of old stuff with Ohtani because he's one of my all-time favorites from the New Japan Juniors. I watched a bunch of his stuff on there. Also, great to see even earlier stuff than that, though. Like, I watched Dick Murdoch versus Abdullah the Butcher, which may not have been a technical classic, but was still a pretty intense match, and the crowd was really into it. But, yeah, you can go all the way back and watch early Inoki versus Hogan, and a lot of that was stuff from the 70s. The late 70s, get into the early 80s. I've been checking out a lot of that stuff because a lot of that is stuff that I've always read about but never had a chance to see. There's Brody matches up there. There's Stan Hansen. So, I mean, if you're into the history, it's pretty good.
What have you done with your VHS tapes, Mouth? Do you still have a big collection, or are you like John? Have you decided to digitize?
Oh, no. When it comes to that stuff, Way, I've kept it all. I've still got a working VHS machine, and that stuff, there was no place else to see it, and I would never want to get rid of those tapes. And I recorded them all in SP, so they still play really good in that. So every once in a while, I can go down there and especially when it comes to All Japan, I can go down there and, you know, watch a Kawada Misawa classic if I'm feeling it.
Now, Mouth, you mentioned spending Christmas with a person that me and Wei were both very excited to meet for the first time this year, that being your mother, Mrs. Lavransky,
right,
who is a massive mixed martial arts fan, and you've talked a bit about it on the show. Will she be watching Jones and Cormier January 3rd?
You know, this one, yeah, I think definitely for sure she'll check this one. I know she watches anything that's on the TV for free, like prelims or if they do a full card. Like she was, you know, she called me the other day and was very upset about the Junior Dos Santos fight and that, and she wasn't sure that the right person won.
Oh.
And, you know,
she thought Stipe won it. I see.
What's that?
She thought Miocic took it. It was close. Yeah.
Yeah, she thought he actually won the fight. So, yeah, no, she gets right into it. She loves it whenever two people are fighting and perhaps one person is dominating, and then somebody manages to turn it around really quick, like the Eric Silva fight on the show from a couple weeks back. There, she loved that. She thought that was, even though it was a short fight, she thought that was amazing.
Mouth, as we wind down things here, I do want to let people know that for next weekend on The Law, of course, we have the Worst Of coming up this weekend, but the following week, I'm very excited because not only do we have UFC 182 to cover, but we're also going to be doing a full rundown of Wrestle Kingdom. And how are you going to be spending your Saturday night watching all this? Because you have the option to watch 182, take an hour break, and then you could watch New Japan live at 2 in the morning, Mouth.
That is pretty crazy. That is... I'm not sure how I'm going to handle that. I'm totally pumped for both. Like the UFC, like we talked about on The Law when we did the Best Of show, that is going to be a really smoking hot show. A lot of good fights lined up for that one. A great start to the new year. So I'm really looking forward to that. But I'm totally stoked for New Japan, especially now that, you know, I have access to New Japan World and the fact that I can watch it on pay-per-view. I'm probably going to... I watch the UFC live, and then I'll probably PVR the New Japan show and watch it as soon as I get up in the morning on Sunday because I am really stoked. You know, once again, it's got a string of really hot matches, and I'm just really happy that we're going to get to cover this on The Law because it's always so hard for us to cover this kind of stuff because A, getting to see the stuff ourselves, and B, we don't really know sometimes how much of our audience is following this kind of product. But now with New Japan World making it so simple, you know, it's cheap. The streaming is unbelievable how good it is. It's super easy to sign up, even though it's in Japanese. So I'm hoping that with covering this one, John, that we'll be able to maybe do more of these as well, and that we'll actually get more people that listen to our show following this product as well, because, I mean, I have to admit, WWE this past year was really not that exciting. There were a couple moments here and there, but overall, I found the project kind of, the product to be kind of in cruise control this year, and it's great to see something like New Japan offered as another alternative along with Ring of Honor and other stuff like that. So I hope that with us covering it on the show, John, that more people will get into it.
I think a lot of people are going to be watching this pay-per-view. I mean, a sizable amount of the people that would listen to a show like this. I think if you've at least heard about the word of mouth of New Japan, this would be the kind of entryway to finally sample the product if you've just heard about it forever. I think the fact that Jim Ross is doing commentary is a good incentive for people that maybe for whatever reason. I always loved the Japanese commentary, so I've never had an issue with that. But for other people, that's a hiccup. So
no, I used, it's, that's funny that you say that, because I used, back in the days when I was compiling those tapes on a regular basis, I was working at a video production house, and I would, if it wasn't busy, I would sit there and watch the Japanese tapes. And the one guy I worked with, he could not comprehend how I could sit there and watch it and not understand what they were saying. And, well, that's crazy, man. I can't watch that. I don't know what they're saying. I'm like, just watch the match.
Well, Mouth, we will let you get back to your Christmas festivities in beautiful Simcoe, and we will see you this Sunday as you compile your worst of 2014 list, as I will have to get down to doing mine.
As we used to say, or our best of TNA show.
Well, we'll see. This Sunday night, midnight Eastern.
And you're going to join us, right?
I don't think so. No, I mean, just because I feel like it should be both, you know? I can't just be negative.
There's just so much, yeah.
Yeah.
A man that is just bound by his ethics, Wei Ting. But you will physically be there, will you not, Wei?
I will be there.
He will be there for our annual gift exchange, which became popular YouTube video last year.
I got my blank space on the wall for the calendar. It's all set up.
All right. Well, Mouth, Merry Christmas, and we'll chat with you this Sunday.
All right, guys. Take care.
Dan the Mouth Wolveransky. Mr. Ting.
Amazing. Well, I don't think he's going to make it through to the end. Actually, you know what, though? He could. Dan could. It's always usually number one or number 30.
It's about setting the pace that the others now have to follow.
Yeah. He's the Iron Man.
He is the Iron Man. Really, he is the Iron Man of live audio wrestling.
True, he is.
I mean, he has been there since 1998.
Mm-hmm.
A lengthy time.
Yeah.
Much longer than myself.
Yeah. The longest ever. The longest tenure on the law.
The longest running weekly host in radio history.
I don't know about that. Who is that?
Who is the longest running weekly host?
Yeah.
In radio? Oh, geez. I don't know. I'm sure that there are hosts who have been doing daily radio shows for decades in some markets.
Okay, whatever. Forget it. Forget I asked.
Did you listen to anything on the radio this year that was not law related?
Oh, good question. I mean, I don't even listen to music on the radio anymore. Certainly didn't. I might have listened to like the news channel, you know. I probably listened to like a weather report.
If you were stuck in traffic?
Yeah. Oh, I wanna
which is
know.
Not as big an issue for you any longer.
Not at all. Here's one of the things that kind of sucks about, you know, living so close to work now. I don't have really much of a commute at all. I have a 7-minute walk. That means certainly don't drive down stuck in traffic. I also don't even take public transit. And that's great. I love it. But what it has affected strongly is my podcast listening. I don't really like take the time to listen to podcasts anymore, just because I really have no time to listen to it because I'm here and there in 7 minutes. It's the time it takes for me to untangle my headphone cords. It takes 7 minutes to do that. By the time I untangle, I'm already at work.
I was very much worried for you sometimes when you would talk about driving home and it would take you an hour and a half in bad traffic. And that you were worried you were going to fall asleep.
It happens a lot, actually.
Like, you are an individual that gets tired at times.
Yeah, yeah.
I was very concerned. I think that this move was good for your health.
So let me hear about your podcast listening habits, because you live even closer than I do. So how do you find the time to, or what scenarios do you typically listen to podcasts?
A lot of times, you know, when I do go driving, I'll always listen to it. And then, yeah, I also walk a lot. I'll walk around to wherever I go. I don't really take TTC a whole lot. If there's anything in the city that I'm going to, I typically walk unless it's raining. So you get a lot of stuff you listen to.
You walk every day? Like outside of the walk to work, which is
I would say
five
so.
Minutes.
Fair amount.
Okay, cool.
Sometimes I just go.
Where do you walk?
Wander.
Oh, you're a wanderer.
A wanderer. especially on the weekend when I go out with friends and stuff, I always walk towards it. Like, for instance, if we go to Comedy Bar, that's a good 30-minute walk both ways. So there's an hour right there. I don't know. I don't really know where I listen to all my things. I find I'm listening to less and less now. Like, there's certain shows I make sure I listen to every single week.
Because you're giving so much, you're not receiving.
Well, it's just, I also very much like listening to music, despite you being more the musically inclined of us two.
That's not true.
I find that sometimes just listening to music is my yoga. It's my relaxation.
Cool.
To just walk.
What are you listening to these days?
I listen to all kinds of stuff. I mean, if we were to...
Yeah, pull up your iPod. John Pollock's playlist, everybody.
Okay, I'm going to...
What?
Here are three random songs.
No. Go. What are the new songs? What are the songs that you're currently listening to?
Well, I mean, I just have my library here.
Okay.
Okay, if I just stop on one, it would be... I swear to God, my finger landed on this.
Play it. Nice. Classic.
He didn't have a good year.
I'm free.
So sometimes it's a Creed day. Other times it might be Captain Hollywood, More and More. We've got a live rendition of E-Type's Life. A great
song. Live one, yeah. That's the best one. That's a great version. All right.
Sandstorm performed live.
What does that sound like live? Like
it doesn't sound all that different. It's pretty much...
I can't...
Check him out, dog.
Like, is there a guy playing keyboards?
I don't know. I can only hear it.
Or is it just like dancers? And a guy pressing a button?
I don't know about you. I much rather prefer live versions of songs than the actual...
No, not me.
I like hearing a crowd reacting to a song. I think it sounds so much better.
Certain scenarios, yes. I mean, I think once you're familiar with the studio recording of the song, for me, once I really love the studio version of a song, then I'll want to hear it live. I'll want to hear, you know, the crowd react
Fair
to
enough.
Certain parts.
Sometimes as well, it's when you... That's what I always loved about music videos, was that when I could see pictures attached to the music, sometimes that would enhance it greatly for me.
Yeah, that's true. Me
and
too.
I can definitely say, for wrestling, when they would use a song and it was one of those great videos that
like,
they did,
like,
that would make
like
me...
the classic that you just pulled up.
Well, that was higher. But my sacrifice...
No, that was my sacrifice.
No, that was higher.
Oh, was it?
They
all sound the same.
They do
sorry.
Sound similar. I kind of walked into that one. But totally, I... That was the first time I ever heard My Sacrifice, and that totally changes to me the perception of a song is when you associate it with pictures that just makes the song cooler.
Exactly.
Beautiful Day. I would never have listened to the song Beautiful Day except for the Hunter videos, and they also had a Kazushi Sakuraba video to Beautiful Day, which was pretty awesome at the time as well.
I don't think that did anything for me. It just like it was like two uncool things put together.
Oh wow.
It was Triple H and you too.
A man coming back from a quad tear. Well, watch the Sakuraba video. Maybe
okay,
that will change your perception of you too.
What's that noise?
Uh-oh, is that a clock? Merry Christmas, Alex Greenfield.
Oh, thank you very much. You know I celebrate the season with remarkable religious fervor.
It's John Pollock and Wei Ting here with you on Christmas morning, no
Wei,
less, Alex.
Wei is here. I'm assuming he's going to ditch court, though, right?
Well, they're having some issues right now. We're going to hopefully try and work them out.
I was listening to you guys talking earlier, and I can't believe I feel like I should mediate like Jesse Jackson in North Korea or something.
What are your thoughts on this, Alex? Because I understand both sides. Court obviously feels a little offended by this, but Wei believes that there's too much on his Twitter feed and he needs to cut down. He's got a very lean Twitter feed. That is his New Year's resolution. So, I mean, mediate here, Alex. What are your thoughts on Twitter and how you decide who you follow and unfollow? Because I'm sure there's some friends that sometimes are annoying.
I normally unfollow Court during the summer months when he tweets incessantly about the Yankees. So I'm gotta say I'm with Way on this. I mean, why would you follow Court really?
Oh, listen, it's not. I'm not unfollowing because anybody's annoying. I do care even when Court has to talk about the Yankees. I don't know anything about what he's talking about, but I still appreciate it. I only have so much interest in you know, flipping through my phone to check through all the messages.
What is the status of Alex Greenfield in at Way 0937 land?
Dude, I've said I don't even follow like half. I don't follow any of the coworkers. You're the only guy I follow because you tweet shit like about the show. If you weren't doing that, I wouldn't follow you either.
Man, what an elusive tweeter. Way
is a misanthrope after my own heart. That's what I say. Fuck all of you. I'm going to unfollow every single one of you.
No, Alex, this is a problem. People take this too seriously. It's called a follow.
They take it much too seriously.
Yeah.
There's been, I mean, I'm sure you know this, there's been this thing for, it's got to be years now of MSL basically just begging Conan for a follow, and Conan will tease him with a, well, maybe I'll follow you, and then take it away. Dude, the level, and I think that is mostly parody, but the level of seriousness, like I unfollowed someone for no other reason than they mostly tweeted about sports that I give no shit about, and I unfollowed them. And firstly, the person had like 4,000 followers, so how the fuck would they notice if I wasn't among them? Mm-hmm. But they were like, why did you unfollow me?
Oh, there's people that will go in there.
Care about hockey.
There are programs now where you can go in and actually find out who unfollows you, and I have no earthly idea why people have such a desire to look this up and find this out. It's this information is just, it's craved by so many people.
Yeah.
It's social media as a whole, it's such a part of our lives now, but it's so thoroughly bizarre. Like, there's a whole, I'm sure there have been books written about it, actually, but there's this whole evolving etiquette that I just find completely bizarre. If I want Wade to read something that I have said, I can certainly tag Way in a tweet.
You can phone Way. Way always has his phone on him, and he is a very easy person to get a hold of the old-fashioned way.
No, I call Way all the time. It's those heavy breathing calls at like 3 in the morning every night. That's me.
Those are Way's peak hours. Believe me, midnight till 7 a.m., the man is a monster during those hours.
It's weird. My parents have been getting those, too. Is that also from you, Alex?
You know, Alex, when
I just looked up everything in the book. Nice.
When I looked at our roster of guests, I wanted to address this topic, and you were the person I thought of that you can address this best, because I want your opinion on the Sony.
God damn, pal, that's some vascular reasoning, pal.
The Sony leaks and the fact that the interview will not be available on Christmas Day. What, as a writer, Alex, that maybe has had communication with Sony during your career, what are your thoughts on these leaks and the fact that this movie has been, it's not coming out from Sony, at least not right now?
My first impression as to that, like, I think this is, from a journalistic standpoint, I think this is a wonderfully complex story, from the way the leaks themselves have been covered, to Sony's decision not to release and really the big theater chains electing not to showcase the movie. I at the risk of sounding like, you know, typical George Bush bring it on, interventionist, I really feel like this sets a terrible precedent for, it's a dopey comedy, so it's hard to say for the control of art, but this seems like really the first step on a slippery slope, because if a group of hackers in North Korea or Russia or China or, you know, Anonymous doesn't like a movie, or some conservative equivalent of Anonymous doesn't like a movie, does this become the norm? Like, are we seeing hacks all the time. And if I feel like it incentivizes cyber terrorists to make threats if on the first time it happens, you capitulate completely and in every way. So I don't like the decision either as a writer or just as a person of conscience who believes that people should be able to say things in the public square. As to the leak itself, what I've really been taken with, the sort of story behind the story for me, has been the way journalists have reacted to what all of the leaks are. Like, there are some real stories in the leaks. Like, some of the pay of actors on American Hustle and the difference between Jennifer Lawrence and Amy Adams on the one hand and Bradley Cooper and Christian Bale on the other is really remarkable. And that's a story about gender pay inequity that should be told. But most of the coverage hasn't been about things like that. It's been about snarky fucking emails about Angelina Jolie.
Right.
Or it's very, very gawker celebrity gossip, right? And it occurs to me that this is, I suppose it's a debatable point, but it feels like an actual cyber attack with directly terrorist motives, right? Like, you scare people into doing what you want. That is what this attack was. And the press is taking advantage of it largely for celebrity gossip purposes, and that just feels like some really yellow journalism to me. And I wonder, I sound like the worst old man in the world, but it makes you really question where journalistic ethics are right now, I think.
I think this is the deepest conversation we're going to have on Christmas morning.
I love
it. Oh, oh.
Do you think, and we'll move on, but in terms of this having a ripple effect, Alex, I mean, let's say that a movie studio had earmarked, you know, something akin to Team America to come out in 2015. Is that the kind of thing where they're just simply not going to take the risk of putting out stories that are going to potentially have this kind of backlash, where Sony's going to take a gigantic loss on this project? Is this going to curb kind of risk?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's all, just in terms of them kind of curbing risk when it comes to projects that they're going to green light in light of this entire thing.
I feel like there's definitely going to be a chilling effect. Like, remember for the last few years, it seems like with the remake of Red Dawn and some other things, North Koreans, I think some Call of Duty or Medal of Honor, one of those games too. North Koreans have sort of been the go-to villain of choice in American action, and even French action to a lesser degree. I think it's the kind of chilling effect no one is ever going to say, don't go after North Korea. But in the same way that though there is talk of defiance, you don't see many cartoonists depicting the Prophet Muhammad because of all of the controversy that stirred up. I think you are going to see far fewer North Korean villains in movies for the foreseeable future. And that's a chilling effect because, on the one hand, who cares? These are mostly dopey, you know, this is a dopey comedy. Red Dawn was a dopey action movie. Who cares about using them as villains? What about when you get to somebody wanting to make sort of an Oscar-type movie about somebody escaping North Korea? Or, you know, you just imagine all the stories that can be told. Are those things now going to be off the table so you're not seeing exposés about this really, you know, largely horrific for its citizens' country? I just think the president's terrible, man.
It's interesting to think about. I mean, I do think, though, you know, I feel like as a whole, I think people were less likely to villainize necessarily a group of people, at least when it comes to North Koreans. I suppose, like, you still see a lot of, like, Arab terrorists in movies. But North Koreans, I guess, have largely been off the radar. Like, let's say movies like Iron Man, for instance. But you mentioned that Sony's going to lose this money. How are they going to lose money on this movie? This has been the greatest promotion any movie could have ever received.
Because they are not releasing the film.
They'll eventually release it.
By all accounts, because they pulled it from theaters. They're saying it is not going to be distributed, though there are already rumblings that Netflix has come forward and said, we'll take it.
Do you not think
that they have? I think the last number I read on Variety, sorry to cut you off, is $75 million sunk in between the budget, the principal photography budget of the film, and marketing costs and associated costs. So if they actually didn't release, if this became what it appeared to be becoming yesterday, which is a film that sits on the shelf and never does anything, that's at a minimum a loss of $75 million right there.
Do you think there's any chance that they will not try to capitalize on this whatsoever, either via through Netflix or maybe an eventual theater release, you know, from maybe 4th of July, Alex? 4th of July.
In terms of a marketing ploy, that's actually kind of a genius idea. Like, a lot of people would go out and see it then to give that sort of George Bush, bring it on, fuck you, right? I think you are likely correct. I can't remember what it was called. Collateral Damage. I do remember what it was called. There was a Schwarzenegger action movie right after 9/11 that I think it got shelved for roughly a year or so, and they sort of released it more quietly than they might have otherwise done. But there's going to be a huge, if there are any screeners out there, they're going to be on BitTorrent and be the most widely downloaded thing, you know, ever. Like, if the North Koreans, when they hacked, actually released that with all the other movies sent out there, it would be the biggest BitTorrent of all.
The two biggest questions asked in 2014, why can't the moviegoers watch The Interview in theaters, and why can't the children pray in school?
Why can't the children pray in school? We should just tell anybody still listening after my incoherent fucking rambling about the entertainment industry. When John shot me an email to, he hasn't blocked me on email yet. Just so you know.
No, you're on my safe list, Alex.
There you go. I feel like I've really arrived. He sent an email asking, if I could do the show today. And I said, sure, provided that my entrance music is Why Can't the Children Pray in School by Hoop Hoop Beat Beat Michael P.S. Hayes.
Well, you heard the music come in, Alex. I always deliver.
I came in with a smile on my face.
Last thing, Alex, we've been asking all of our surprise guests today, the biggest story of 2014, in your estimation, getting back to the pro wrestling world, what did it for you in 2014 that above all else have the biggest effects this year and maybe for the foreseeable future?
Well, I think you sort of called it in the final sort of coda of the question, and I bet there's unanimity on the show about this. It's the network. I think the punk story is very big, and if we talk about what will be the big story, I think these will sort of dovetail together. But this year, it was the launch of the network, and sort of a real wake-up call, I think, across the IWC and the general fan community. There are fewer wrestling fans willing to invest than I thought there were. I mean, forgetting even the WWE, I have been consistently shocked. Not even 800,000? Like, it was really shocking to me. And the marketing and the hype at the beginning, like, everything WWE has done throughout this process feels like it's been the wrong move, from creative and de-emphasizing original content to, and I mean, we talked about this before, I was talking to Court the other day, not mentioning NXT's really awesome pay-per-view on either Raw or TLC. Like, they're almost intentionally shooting themselves at the foot in every turn, and it just feels like that's the story of the year for me, because that was, you know, in their minds, going to be the future of the company, the business model, and I think that has turned really unsustainable.
Well, Alex, we appreciate your time here on the Review Away Christmas Spectacular. What is the Christmas drink of choice on Christmas Day?
I actually go weirdly traditional. Eggnog on Christmas Day. Eggnog, Chinese, and movies. Traditional Jewish Christmas.
You can't beat that. Well, Alex, you have a tremendous Christmas, a great New Year's, and we will definitely be chatting with you in the new year.
Take care, guys. Have a great holiday.
Alex Greenfield, our first Jewish guest of the show.
which we completely neglected. But.
And the only guest who I did follow up with a slight apology by email saying, hey, we realized we wish it Merry Christmas to you multiple times, and we apologize, and he made fun of us. Actually, his reply was, because it was rather entertaining.
Well, you did all this like in the time between the end of the call.
I work damn fast with, you know, with text and email. Haha, Jews, atheists, probably a pagan or two. You and Wei have a heathen show. Blast as always.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, I don't know. I'm assuming that somebody like Alex doesn't seem like he gives a shit about that. But I feel like it's important to.
I don't think many people give a shit about that kind of thing. I don't think there's any ill intent when someone says Merry Christmas to another human being.
True. Would you wish it's not like wishing a Japanese person Happy Chinese New Year. Not like that.
Do people specifically say that to you?
Nobody. Yeah, actually, no.
Wouldn't they say Happy New Year?
No. No, because it's, even though, like, I mean, I certainly don't really celebrate Chinese New Year the same way I celebrate New Year's. Like, my New Year's is the Christian New Year's.
You've converted.
I have, yeah.
Yes.
But I don't know, I guess, even in, like, Hong Kong, like, in sort of, like, in most parts of China, I think you still, actually, no, in Chinese you would say Happy New Year, you're right.
What are you gonna do for New Year's Eve?
I don't know. Maybe just have a get together at my place.
You're downtown now.
Yeah, I know. What are you doing?
I have grown to really enjoy New Year's Eve. I used to hate New Year's Eve.
Yeah, because you would get broken up with.
Oh,
now that you're married, I mean, I guess it's still possible, but I mean, you probably see it coming.
I think I've curbed things to avoid that, but I have.
Don't get comfortable though.
I've had a number of relationships where either the breaking point was New Year's Eve or it outright ended on New Year's Eve of both sides of decisions. But nonetheless, it just became a day as a result that I always hated New Year's Eve. Even as a child, I didn't enjoy New Year's Eve. I looked forward to Christmas as a kid, and New Year's Eve was just, it was like a hangover effect, though I didn't drink. It was the metaphorical hangover effect. So I'm never a big fan, but the last few years, like, I don't want to go out for New Year's Eve. So me and my wife, we order Chinese food and watch a bunch of movies, and the last 3 years, 2 years we've done this, and it's been my most enjoyable New Year's Eves I've ever had, to the point that I will go so far as to say, when I was figuring out this whole New Japan thing, if I had had to have left on New Year's Eve, that would have been a deal breaker for me. I would not have I would not have missed New Year's
Eve. Wow, just to stay at home and watch movies with your wife.
Yep, I would not have missed that.
I think that's very romantic. What are you guys watching this year?
I don't know. I don't know what we're going to watch. We suggested maybe watching the 3 Back to the Future movies.
Cool.
Which I just haven't watched in a long time. I wouldn't mind going back and watching.
What is your favorite New Year's movie? Are there movies like with like?
What's a New Year's movie? I don't even
movie?
It doesn't seem like a genre that's too popular at the local video store.
I'm sure there's a BuzzFeed list out there, top 10 New Year's Eve movies. I can't think of any right now.
Yeah, neither can I.
So Back to the Future would be a New Year's Eve.
I don't think that's a New Year's.
Okay, whatever.
Maybe movies that are appropriate to watch on New Year's Eve, but not exactly the content is New Year's thematic.
Well, I'll get back to you on that.
I guess New Year's Eve, in a way, it's like they're based around a clock ticking down.
New Year's movies. New Year's movies. And let's see what Twitter. There's an Indian movie called Happy New Year by Shah Rukh Khan.
Haven't seen it.
List of films set around New Year. This is a list of films set on or around the new year of the Gregorian calendar. Okay, comedy. Four Rooms. Remember that?
Four Rooms.
Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that movie, but I know of it.
Ghostbusters 2. New Year's Day, a UK comedy. Nobody heard of. Trading Places.
Okay, Trading Places.
Disaster. Here's a good one. Poseidon. The Poseidon Adventure. Drama. Boogie Nights.
How is Boogie Nights?
I don't know. Maybe.
Good movie.
End of Days. A 1999 action thriller horror film about the end of the world on New Year's Eve.
Isn't that the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are a bunch of them.
How about boxing?
Not a very good question. Sorry. Sorry I asked.
Well, you can maybe look up some Boxing Day movies.
I don't think that's even worth Googling.
Well, you look them up as we count down for entrant number 3. All right, Wei, we always try on the Christmas edition to have some real special guests, a lot of surprise entrants into this unofficial Christmas Royal Rumble of ours. And how much better can you do than Ariel Helwani joining us on Christmas morning, no less. Ariel, a Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah to you all the way down in New York City. How are you?
Guys, I can think of no better way to spend my Christmas, my favorite holiday of the year, than with you two. My fellow Canadians, so I wish the same to you and your family, and I appreciate you having me on the show.
You know, 2014, a very interesting year, and we've talked a lot about pro wrestling on this show, but wanted to get as well from you, Ariel, some of your thoughts on just 2014 as a whole in mixed martial arts. It seems that a lot of interesting events that happened that are going to have effects in 2015. As you kind of look back at the year, I mean, what are the big stories that just jump out at you this past year? Because I think it was a big one for both pro wrestling and MMA.
Yeah, you know, I think that 2013 was the greatest year in the history of MMA, and in particular the UFC. I think 2014 was not the greatest year in the history of MMA, and in particular the UFC. And when I think about the big moments that happened this year, because there were a lot of them, most of them happen outside of the arenas and cages all over the world. I mean, you think about the big moments that come to mind, you know, right now. Scott Coker replacing Bjorn Revny, signing CM Punk, the Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva saga, the Vitor Belfort saga, the Reebok deal, and then all the injuries and cancellations and, you know, drug test failures and all that stuff. I mean, a lot of these things obviously affected the fight, but the big story of the year, in my opinion, was the fact that the UFC expanded their schedule, more events than ever, and then they were hit with all this bad news. If you want to turn a negative into a positive, you'll say that, well, come 2015, a lot of these people are coming back. Anderson Silva's coming back. Nick Diaz is coming back. Who knows about GSP and Brock Lesnar, but they're certainly in the mix. You've got the potential debut of CM Punk. And then you've got all these big fights that, you know, have been lined up that we've been waiting for. So 2014 wasn't the greatest. Still a lot of huge news, a lot of breaking news, a lot of craziness. But as far as the action goes, I don't think we all got the fights that we wanted. But that means maybe in 2015, much like 2012 and 2013, we'll get them next year.
Do you think, the UFC has taken any measures to try to prevent this from happening next year?
There's a lot that they can't do. Because a lot of this stuff happens in, you know, the gym, as fighters are training for fights. You know, it's funny, I was actually just talking to, a boxer yesterday. A guy you may know, it's not a big deal. I don't think it was a real off-the-record conversation, but I happened to run into him. His name is, Big Baby Miller. He fought, Krokop at the Glory event earlier this year, and mm-hmm. he's going to be boxing in January. And I asked him if he's ever been approached about doing MMA, and he told me, that, you know, there's just so many injuries, and, you know, of course he had his concerns about money, but the point is, as boxers and kickboxers prepare for fights, they don't put their bodies in the kind of situations and through the same kind of trauma that MMA fighters do, because you're using your entire body in MMA, and, you know, you're really subjecting yourself to a lot of punishment. However, the UFC is building a new headquarters, and this thing is going to be state-of-the-art in Las Vegas. And Dana White told me recently that they are going to have some kind of rehab center, a top-notch rehab center. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, drug rehab center. I'm talking about for injuries, to where, you know, if a guy gets injured or is dealing with an injury, he can come there. They know the doctors. They trust these people, and they can help them get back on their way. So clearly they are looking at this issue as a serious one. And I think you're starting to see fighters, you know, we saw recently with Johnny Hendricks, you know, they were talking about how the camp surrounds him, and it's all about him, and he's not just, you know, one out of 10 guys preparing for a fight, and he bangs into another guy, and the coach is all over the place. The entire camp is dedicated and focused on Johnny Hendrix. So I think we're starting to see, much like the sport, the media is evolving, the flights are evolving, the training is evolving, everything is evolving, and that's what makes covering MMA so fun, in my opinion.
Touching on the Punk situation, do you see a point, Ariel, where this guy's just going to go dark when it comes to media? And certainly he is there because, you know, it is a hot-button issue right now, and he is getting interest from media outlets that are not typically going to be focusing a ton on the UFC. There's very few fighters that can go to ESPN and do the whole car wash treatment, but it just feels like Punk is going out there, and there's only so much you can ask this guy in terms of, we don't know a fighter that he's going to be taking on. We basically know a rough timetable of when he's going to fight. And there's a part of me that just feels for this guy that's going out there, and essentially it's just being, you know, he's got to put up with this criticism 24/7, that I think there's just going to be a breaking point where the fight will get announced and this guy just is going to need to just go dark for a while until it's time to fight.
Well, yeah, I think he's going to go dark even before the fight is announced, well before the fight is announced. You know, I thought that I had some issues with the way they unveiled the news, but in the end, I think it was fine. It got the traction that they wanted, and I think they wanted to carefully come out with this thing. I don't think they wanted to make too big of a deal about it because, you know, there are some questions and some criticisms and some valid ones, and even Dana White saying afterwards that, you know, he's skeptical as well. So I think they wanted to, you know, kind of tread lightly here. So they come out with it on pay-per-view. That's fine. They do the press conference. That's fine. I like the fact that they had him up there alone and not try to take away any of the spotlight from, you know, Anthony Pettis and Robbie Lawler in particular, who had just won, you know, big fights. And he did some interviews that night. That was cool. I thought afterwards he should then go away. Like, give people a taste and then just disappear. Much like our old friend Steve Borden, a.k.a. Sting, right? He showed up, gave people a little taste, and then has since disappeared as far as I'm concerned. So that's what I thought they should do. But it's very exciting times for the UFC. As you said, you know, not a lot of guys can get that kind of traction. Also, you consider the fact not a lot of guys get that traction or females when they don't even have a fight to announce. Like, it's one thing for Jon Jones to do the car wash when he's about to fight Daniel Cormier. Are they going to take Jon Jones 12 months before his next fight? I don't know about that. Ronda Rousey as well. So that was big what he has been doing the last few days. But I've even said it to him, I felt like he should just kind of be quiet because he's opening himself to this criticism that really isn't fair. I mean, they came out, they announced it, and now he has to go prepare for a year or so, find a team, you know, get into his group, prepare, train, all that stuff. And now you're just answering the same questions over and over again, and you keep answering this stuff, and you're trying to give out different answers because you don't want to sound redundant, and that leads to criticism, and you say something that maybe you don't truly believe. I mean, you know, all these things can happen. But again, it's exciting times, and they want to do it. You know, the thing is, and I'd love to get your take on it,
sure,
which I said recently on the MMA beat, when Punk was in WWE, he called himself the best in the world. You know, he was borderline cocky, right? A lot of people thought, like, how dare this guy when he was coming up? But you could tell. I mean, this guy oozed confidence. And now when I see him sitting there and answering this stuff, and, you know, I think he's such a great interview because he's humble, he's self-deprecating. But you know in the back of his mind that he's confident. Now the more and more he's being asked these questions, he doesn't come across as the quote-unquote best in the world. And he shouldn't, because he isn't the best in the world in this world. But I feel like they need to protect him. And you know, not make him do all this stuff before he gets that mojo back in this sport, gets his, you know, his legs under him. And I feel like there's a big difference between this Punk and that Punk. In the WWE, that Punk is doing interviews and he's kind of going in and out of character. Here, he's trying hard to just be himself, and I respect him for it very much so. And I think he said all the right things. It's not a criticism of him. I think the UFC needs to protect him a little bit. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And that is very notable that you watch him, and I think he's gone about it the right way, is that, yeah, this guy is at square one at the bottom of the food chain in this industry, and it's jarring for a lot of people that followed him in pro wrestling, where he was absolute on the top, and he had that confidence, that cockiness that it takes to be a top guy in that field, and I think it's that built-in confidence that I think is going to get him through a lot of this stuff that he has to face that, I don't care what you say, there's no fighter that is going to receive more criticism in 2015 than this guy. And there's a lot of fighters that I think would break under that kind of a pressure. And I think just because of that background, he was in a very polarizing industry beforehand, that's a positive for him in terms of what he's going to have to face, regardless of the training and the actual fighting that ultimately he's going to be judged by. But you certainly see that in his demeanor in these interviews, and I think it's been smart for him to come in with some kind of a chip on his shoulder or overconfidence. I think would be the wrong move for him at this point. I think he's conveyed himself very well in these interviews. I think even the harshest critics, they listen to this guy in context in these full interviews. It's like this guy at the very least has a healthy and huge respect for these fighters and understands where that criticism comes from. It's not like this guy is oblivious to why all these people are questioning it. He totally understands that.
And you know what? I find, you know, this might upset people or they might laugh at this, but I find that he's actually brought a little class to MMA because, you know, you have Matt Brown who's, you know, just going after him and criticizing him, and others have as well. And, you know, he's on ESPN. He goes, well, thanks for calling me an athlete, and just moves along. You know, Nate Diaz goes off and he's like, yeah, I'm still a Nate fan. I understand where he's coming from. Sometimes in MMA, there's so much, you know, testosterone and alpha male crap that, you know, guys keep going back and forth. And I love the fact that he has this approach like, all right, you know, just water off my back, bulletproof vest, no problem. He's been there before and he was prepared for all this. Very few people could have handled the last couple of weeks the way he has, and he's done it the right way. But now I feel like, I felt like they should have had a camera on him from the moment he signed that contract until the moment he goes out there and finishes his camp. And then you put that in a three-part episode, series on Fox or FS1 and worst case scenario Fight Pass. And you really show what it's like to change careers, you know, past 35 and be the target that everyone wants and all that crap. And then just, you know, show everything as he's choosing his team, the ups and downs, does he move, the family life, the weight cutting, everything. It would be fascinating. I hope they're doing it. I don't know if they are. I hope they are.
Maybe a walk and talk.
He's been handling it great.
Maybe we'll get a walk and talk out of it.
You know what? Walk and talks are great. Everyone loves a good walk and talk, but this one I think really deserves a little more, you know, a little more time. And I don't want to see it. I don't want to see anything of this thing until this fight is announced and until we're like 3 weeks away from the fight. And then you break that thing out there, people will eat it up, and if done correctly. See, that's the thing. Up until this point, okay, it's fine. You know, we can nitpick the media, but look, they got CBS Radio, they got, you know, ESPN and Rome and all that stuff. Fine, fine, fine. I'll give them that. But there's no real payoff right now. The ones who are getting the payoff are the media outlets that are getting CM Punk on their show right now. The UFC is not selling any pay-per-view with him on it today, tomorrow, or next month. But what are they going to do, you know, 2-3 months out? How are they going to roll this out? And that starts with the opponent. That starts with, you know, the campaign, the marketing, all that. That's when we'll really decide if the UFC handled this correctly.
What was your favorite shoe of the year? Your favorite new pair of shoes that you received this year?
That's a good question. You know, I haven't seen you guys at an event in a long time. I think the last event that you guys covered was UFC 171. Is that accurate?
175. We were there for that, for the tough finale night as well. It's been a bit
I'm
of a so stretch.
Of course. Of course. I was there. I saw you. So all that to say, I kind of evolved a little bit from the shoe guy. I mean, I still wear the shoes. I still like a good pair of shoes. But, you know, Fight Night, I've felt recently that it's time to sort of dress up a little bit and treat this like a big event. So I don't wear the funky shoes Fight Night. That being said, I did get a pair that I like very much, a pair of Nike SBs that have a material of like a hacky sack. You know the hacky sack that we used to play with as
kids? Yes, yes.
You guys play with those? Yeah. So it has that kind of material, and they're very comfortable, and I like them very much. But I haven't been as aggressive with my shoe buying as I was in the past. I kind of just feel a little better, you know, dressing up and wearing normal shoes and a full suit now, no more jeans. On fight night, leading up to the fight, you know, that's a different story, but on fight night, that's what I do. It's probably a little too much information than you asked for, but that's what I love with the shoes right now.
This is what I want to know. What does Fox think of the sneakers? Did they have any say in that?
No, they actually didn't. They were actually surprised. You know, when I first, you know, a lot of credit to Fox. When I first started, they said, just be yourself. If you notice, if you've ever seen, like, the weigh-in shows or anything like that, you know, everyone's wearing their own thing, and I wear something completely different. Like, the weigh-in shows, everyone's not wearing a tie. I wear a tie because I don't like wearing a suit without a tie. I feel weird about that. So even from day one, they said they were cool with the jeans, they were cool with the shoes, and a lot of people thought that, you know, they made me, like, every time I always see Matt Hughes at the event, he's always very disappointed. He always brings it up that I'm wearing these shoes, and I tell him, you know, just like Mick Foley, I sold out. And everyone, you know, everyone comes to that fork in the road, and you have to decide if you want to sell out, and I guess I sold out. But I honestly feel a little better about myself at the events. Like I feel like, you know, in boxing, they have this tradition of wearing the tuxedo, and I don't want to go that far, but I do feel like you got to pay respects to the event and to where we are and what these guys are doing, and girls as well. So I feel like it's the proper thing to do now. But Fox had nothing to do with it.
You sold out. S-O-L-E-D.
I did.
Oh,
now back to your question, John, about Christmas. I am actually in Miami.
Ooh.
It has been a while since I have had any kind of vacation. It's been a very long time. And so I'm going there, and I'm hanging out there, and I will be going to Las Vegas from Miami on December 31st, God willing, Jesus willing. And then I'll be covering UFC 182.
Beautiful. Well, I want to leave everyone dangling because the MMA Report returns on Friday, yes. January the 2nd. It's my favorite show of the year. It's the prediction show, which, Ariel, I'm hoping you'll be on for the third straight year in a row, where we're going to go through some predictions and look at our predictions from a year ago and play the likely, yes, unlikely game.
Yes, I love that. Do you have a sense as to how good I did right now, or do you still have to go back and listen to the
I day? Still have to go back. So I'll bring up I made like about 25 predictions on that show, many of which will probably sound ridiculous, but usually there's one or two that really, I know that Kurt Angle did not do color commentary for World Series of Fighting, and that was one that you did state that was unlikely on your part. So that one you have going for you.
Wow, yes, I can't wait to do that. It would be a pleasure. And I got to give you guys props. You guys do a tremendous job. Not just saying that because we're on the air here. With the podcast and everything, I really have not watched, I don't think I've watched 20 minutes of pro wrestling in 2014. But for some weird reason, I still love hearing you guys talk about it. I don't know why. I don't know who any of these people, I can't even point them out if they're in my living room. But yet, I still love hearing about Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose and all these characters. On The Law, you do a great job, and review. I listened to your entire review of the Stone Cold Steve Austin interview that I didn't even watch. I mean, it was good enough for me. I appreciate all the work that you guys do and all the time you put into it. So, great year. Keep it up.
Well, likewise, Ariel. We both appreciate all of your work on the MMA Hour, the MMA Beat. You are one of the busiest men in media, period, and you do a fantastic job. So we thank you very much for stopping by here on Christmas morning, no less, a man who does have children, and we appreciate having you on the show, and we'll chat with you next week on the big prediction show on the MMA Report.
All right. Thanks, guys. Happy holidays.
Making his review away Royal Rumble debut, Ariel Helwani, our good pal from New York.
Mm-hmm. And second Jewish guest.
Second Jewish guest of the show.
Yeah.
In Miami, Florida.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
Maybe training with American Top Team. But they're in Coconut Creek.
Coconut Creek.
Maybe he's trying out for... Well, TNA's not even around there anymore. Eh?
Maybe he'll get signed.
Maybe he'll be the opposite crossover. He'll be the MMA guy who goes into pro wrestling.
Maybe he can face Punk.
No. Hey, so this, what weight class is Alberto Del Rio?
Alberto Del Rio, he competed at...
Heavy?
Heavyweight, yeah.
Okay.
Do you think he's going to fight in 2015?
I don't think he's got so much going on. I don't think for him...
It'd be a lot of money Bellator will throw at him to do it. I could see him possibly considering it.
Depends his motivation. I mean, I don't even know if when the last time he really trained was.
Do you think him fighting in Bellator? I just don't.
It wouldn't do the same.
The same. But
a smaller brand in Bellator and a smaller.
Like, I feel that have a similar effect as Bobby Lashley, yeah, if not less.
Yeah, I agree.
It's depending on if he fought with the mask on or not.
I don't think he'll have the match.
He could fight Miracle Krokop, a rematch.
Depends if... okay, here's the...
12 years later.
Here's the question, is if Alberto Del Rio fights somebody in Bellator, do you think the opponent will be aggressively training armbar defense?
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be awesome if he actually tried an arm bar.
Yeah. He should come out in the car.
It would be the most over finish in wrestling afterwards.
He should come out in the car. He should have Ricardo do the,
oh my
do
gosh.
The thing. Anyway.
You know, every purist is just disgusted.
They're not listening to our Christmas show.
Of course they are.
No.
This trumps all different fans.
Who do you think would win in a fight? Do you think Alberto Del Rio would win or CM Punk?
Del Rio.
No doubt, huh?
Del Rio was like a wrestler, not a pro, just pro wrestler.
On the
very accomplished wrestler.
On the WWE roster, who do you think is the most legit fighter? Like, who would do the best in an MMA setting on the current roster?
On the current roster? I know there's some guys in developmental that are serious wrestlers. But the main roster, Jack Swagger comes to mind.
Because of his wrestling.
Yeah, because of his wrestling. He is the first one that jumps out at me. And someone that isn't too banged up from wrestling that you think could still be very competitive, especially if we're talking about other wrestlers in the industry. Yeah, he's the one that would be my pick. Anyone that comes to mind
Jack
for you?
Swagger, wow. That's amazing. I know, it makes total sense. I'm just thinking, because he's so low on the roster. I mean, you figure with somebody that inspires that much confidence in you, he'd get a bigger push, I guess.
He had his best year this past year in the WWE.
Doesn't Rusev have some shoot fighting? Maybe I'd pick Santino.
Santino, did a lot of judo.
Canadian judoka.
His neck, though, is a mess. Okay. I don't think he would be wise to be doing MMA at this stage of his career.
Mm.
So... Well, there you go.
Brawl for All 2014.
Oh, God.
Is what I want to see.
I wonder if they'll ever be dumb enough to try that. They couldn't do that again. That would never happen in 2015.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't get sanctioned.
No, it would not be sanctioned. What a review that one was this past year.
Yeah, one of the better ones this year.
Yeah, going back and watching some fantastic brawls. Mm-hmm. At least they had the title right.
What do you mean?
Little Technique, just brawls.
Yes, yes.
Road Warrior, Hawk.
Steve
Blackman?
Yeah.
I mean, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Blackman, a man who helped train Dennis Bermudez.
I don't want him in my corner. Maybe he could fight Punk. Just bring out all the wrestlers.
Yeah. Well, that's our MMA chatter, tying in the pro wrestling audience. I'm curious to see in next year how many wrestling fans kind of get more into MMA than they have been in past years, because it seems it's been a pretty stark divide the last 2 years. And over the last few weeks, I mean, I've gotten lots of, just comments from people that are asking me about the MMA report, ones who have said they've never listened before. I think in 2015, there's going to be...
Isn't there a problem with your iTunes feed?
Sometimes. Well, it's... listen, I have no illusions that the MMA report is at the top of... our wrestling fans listen to list when they're wandering and walking and listening to podcasts. But I think in next year, I think it's good for us, the fact that there is hopefully more crossover and people are watching more UFC or Bellator just out of sheer curiosity of kind of the wrestling style booking and B, the wrestling actual characters that they're trying to kind of build upon.
So you're saying people will complain less about our talking MMA?
No. They'll find new things to complain about. Mm. New things to complain about.
Gotcha.
Just everything. All right. It is about that time. The intervals are just coming hot and heavy here. It is time for entrant number 4. The ring's starting to get a little crowded here.
Look, Errol Hawani is about to take Dan Laransky off the top turnbuckle right there.
Oh, man, he just jabbed him with a microphone, can see.
And there's Alec.
Greenfield might be smoking a joint on the floor.
Greenfield just, he's skinning the cat. Look at Alex, look at the athletic agility of Alex Greenfield.
Oh, my goodness. Here he is, entrant number 4. Or is it a she?
Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
The next guest, Way, in the Christmas Royal Rumble here, the man we need to have on the show, Brian Mann, with us frequent contributor to the Live Audio Wrestling Network of shows. Brian, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you guys. Thanks for having me on and saying that I was needed. That's a very high order to enter into.
Listen, me and Wei, we book this deal every year, and we have our requisite guests, and Brian Mann has to be on that list. Very few people that we can call upon when needed to sit and watch a three-hour Raw. We can count them on one hand with fingers left over, and Brian Mann, someone that has come through many a time for us this year.
Well, if it helps, I only watched it when you asked me to.
Well, oh, come on, that's not true, Brian, because I will say I do follow Brian Mann, and he is one of the most entertaining Raw live tweeters that are out there.
He is a quality tweeter and not a quantity tweeter, and those are the people I enjoy following.
Well, I really appreciate that. It means a lot that so I can have the weird conversation. Someone who doesn't like wrestling follows me. About a week later, they'll always ask me, why do you talk about wrestling so much? So I'm glad you guys appreciate it.
It is at Brian Max Mann, and
Man with two N's.
Man with two N's. He's twice the man. Just a very interesting perspective on the sport that we love so much.
What's it like, Brian, as someone that comments on pro wrestling? You were in that system of, you know, you can label yourself former WWE writer. I mean, do you have people that come to you with questions, with observations that only an ex-writer can really fully convey what that experience is like?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I will. If people come to me, sometimes they'll have, like, they'll want to pitch story ideas, or they'll have, like, crazy conspiracy theories. And at the end of the day, it's really just, and I mean this with love, it's just incompetence. It's why things are the way that they are. But sometimes people will come and, like, have these big theories, like, oh, are they, like, purposely making the show awful, you know, so that ratings will go up in, you know, for the Rumble, or are they, like, making it terrible because Roman Reigns isn't on TV, so they want to, like, give people something to look forward to? No, that's not what it is at all. It's a flawed creative structure is what it is.
So we've kind of been asking a lot of people, like, the big story of 2014. Yeah. I think there were many of them. Certainly the network was, I think, the one that's going to have the most lasting effects for years to come. But what were some of the key points when you think about the past 365 days? What really jumped out at you? Because I think there was quite a lot that went down in professional wrestling this year, from TNA leaving Spike, with the network, of how so much has changed with the business model, the new TV deal that the WWE signed. I mean, what were some of the highlights for you this year, or lowlights?
I think the really big thing was how amazing my prediction last year was. I predicted last year that CM Punk would win the Royal Rumble, and he did, and he it was a great year for him.
Man, you called it. I mean, a year that was built around Punk in pro wrestling.
You called the UFC
Everyone's
deal.
Like, huh, this is, he became a crossover star. Even I didn't see that coming. But I think that since I started kind of paying attention to pro wrestling again back in 2009, I would definitely say this was the most important year in terms of the business. The only other thing I can think that had even a kind of a close effect was maybe when, like, The Rock came back, and that reinvigorated interest a little bit. But this was a huge year, and I think it was a huge year. I think we'll kind of look back and see 2014 as a year that really changed a lot of things. Either from it, you know, the WWE, for me, the banner is sort of the WWE and their business practices being exposed this past year. And just the way in which they run their business, and by effect, a lot of other pro wrestling companies have sort of, defined their goals and their successes. That whole thing for me, at least, has kind of been exposed and blown out the water. This whole, like, the whole independent contractor status, the idea that you need to have, this promotion, that these wrestlers can't really be in charge of their own destiny and their career. I think a lot of that is kind of falling by the wayside for a lot of reasons. Rather, it's the company, you know, kind of really bungling and ruining some careers due to some really terrible creative, or making these large business decisions without real respect for their roster and their locker room. And we've seen that, you know, and it's affected TNA. I think this WWE business model, in the way they do business, was kind of exposed this past year, and I don't think we've necessarily felt all the ramifications I think more of that's going to come in this next year. But we saw everything from CM Punk and Alberto Del Rio leaving and arguably having better lives afterwards. Same could be said for AJ Styles.
Yep.
And then, you know, even past that, you have guys like Daniel Bryan really exposing the real kind of the fallacy, I would almost say, of how WWE creates their product and the product they're selling. Because for me, I feel that the fact that we're seeing things like Lucha Underground and ROH getting bigger and the whole New Japan deal, if WWE was doing their job and making their fans satisfied and really quench need for these companies, they would have no desire. They would have no outlet. But I think that there is a very large fan base, which they've called a minority for a long time, that is finally getting access to something elsewhere. And to be fair, I think the competition in the marketplace is great, but to use a Vince McMahon, you know, metaphor from the past, I guess, there's a reason the XFL didn't work, and it's because the NFL was quenching people's thirst for football, and they were satisfied with the football product they were getting. There was no need for a second brand. WWE has done such a bad job of keeping their fan base satisfied that we're getting all these other options springing up, honestly, because they've been asleep at the wheel. And that for me, I think, is going to be the biggest story in the grand scheme of things.
So of those secondary products, and, you know, if you are a wrestling fan, especially in the U.S., all of these secondary alternatives are going to have some kind of television distribution from Ring of Honor, TNA, Lucha Underground, even New Japan on Access. Of those products, what has your interest, Brian? What has kind of been the product that you think you at least have a curiosity to either watch more of or sample in 2015, now that it might be easier to actually find on your television?
Well, I think it's really interesting because a lot of these changes that I've seen were things that even I was advocating for in 2011 when I was with the company. I think a lot of the things that Lucha Underground does in terms of their the way their show is produced and shot, in terms of the backstage segment, I still think the crew that's putting it together is really figuring out how to properly do the in the ring and in the arena pro wrestling aspect of things. But the backstage segments are great. In terms of live shows, I was at the Best in the World ROH show, Final Battle, I should say. I thought that was a fantastic show live. I thought being in Terminal 5, it was the first time I've been at a wrestling show that I actually felt cool to be at. And I really enjoyed the crowd that was there, and I loved the energy. That was a great thing live. And also this whole New Japan deal, I'm really excited to see that product with an English commentary, mm-hmm. even though, you know, I can think of one English commentator I would love to hear calling the action. But
what a cryptic message. You're talking about Way, aren't you?
Kevin Nash.
I'm talking about Way. I'm sorry it didn't work out, Way. But to see them, and I think that even though I love that style and I love their matches and I love the in-ring product, I really think that English commentary, even more so than Jim Ross and someone who else I can't remember right now, I'm excited to see Mauro Ranallo and Josh Barnett and what they do on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see it, and I'm expecting myself as a fan being able to connect to those characters even at a higher level now that having that benefit of English commentary.
Yeah, I think that commentary is going to be something. I know that the people from New Japan that were there for they did 4 days of tapings, which were insane when it was 13 hours they were calling over 4 days, but they were blown away by both of them. So
exactly. And the thing with that New Japan show, I think that New Japan show has a real solid chance because let's say it does less than Lucha Underground numbers. Let's say 10,000 people are watching the show each week. It's a really cheap show to do. I mean, you got the two guys to do commentary over the course of a week, but it's all existing video. It certainly isn't the undertaking that a Lucha Underground is. So I'm really excited that hopefully that show can find its niche. Obviously, Mark Cuban has wanted to do pro wrestling for a while, didn't necessarily want to do everything that was associated with funding ROH. So I think they found something that can really have a lifespan there.
So as we end off, are you going to be so bold as to make a prediction for 2015, Mr. Mann?
Yes. I'm going to make a few predictions here.
Okay, go for it.
One of, and this is, if anyone from WWE is listening, this is just more of a storyline pitch. I would love it if you guys would put Sami Zayn in the Royal Rumble and then have Kevin Steen come out and eliminate him from the crowd or something like that. I think it's a hot way to get those guys some mainstream exposure and also tease an NXT storyline, get people to start watching that on the network a little bit more. Plus, it's Philly. People are going to know who they are. My big prediction, though, that I'm going to have, because go big or go home, I'm going to say that 2015 is the last year that we see Vince McMahon in a full-time creative capacity with WWE.
Wow.
I'm not saying that the thing where it's like he's going to be like, it's going to be a coup and he's going to be ousted and like thrown into the streets, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see something, especially depending on how Mania goes, either it's the board or it's stockholders, as NXT maybe improves here, that they tease the idea of, well, let's give Paul Levesque a 3-month trial period, running these shows. But honestly, I think if you look at the past year and all the decisions that they've made, it's very obvious that that Vince McMahon, at his age, and at the size of that company, he just doesn't have the perspective to be able to run it anymore. It's gotten too large. And I'm not saying that he couldn't do one aspect of it, but he can't do all of it. And so I think this is going to be the last year that we see Vince in a full creative capacity. And I don't think it's going to be a huge news story. I don't think it's going to be something that like is being reported on and that like stock investors are like reacting to. I think it'll be a small thing that like Meltzer will report on and those of us in the know will kind of be aware of it. But I don't think it's going to be like a huge thing that they're going to announce on the website or anything like that.
Listen to this millennial just thinking that, you know, we're just going to toss off Vince McMahon to the side. You know, you're just one of those critics, Brian. He doesn't listen to critics.
He's going to be the chairman of that company until the day that he dies. But in terms of what he's actually doing, we'll see.
Well, Brian, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for stopping by and your assistance with us over the year. We always appreciate having you on, and we will look back at this a year from now and look at Brian Mann's fearless predictions.
Of course, anytime. Thanks for having me, guys. And, of course, I hope you guys enjoy Canadian Christmas. It's in March, right?
It's coming up. And the ring fills up now with Brian Maxwell Mann added to the fray.
Hey, sorry, before we continue, we may have mistakenly said that Alex Greenfield was the first Jewish guest on our show. Isn't Dan Jewish?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I'll tell you why, because Damien Abraham told me that the first time he met Mouth. Was it Damien? Let's cut this whole part out.
What?
I'm just, I swear I had a conversation with somebody recently where it was revealed to me that Dan went to some type of a synagogue, and I can't remember if it was Damien or not, but somebody told me that they met Dan at a synagogue, and I was like, I didn't know Dan was Jewish. And they're like, yeah, Lavransky.
Okay, I've known Dan for 11 years. I have never.
Well, he's not practicing. Heard that. He's not a practicing.
Well, you would think that info would come up at some point.
Yeah, you would.
No. I don't think he's Jewish.
Okay.
I would be very.
Well, what are you going to do? Call him now?
If anyone knows. I don't know who would know. We should call his mom. His mom would have been a great guest, actually, to have on. I very much enjoyed meeting Dan's mom this past year at his birthday.
Yeah, me, I did too. So is Brian Jewish?
I'm not even going to guess anymore. I feel we're bound to offend someone.
Well, Dan loves, like, Dan celebrates Christmas so much. But, I mean, I guess maybe his mom isn't. I don't know.
We need to just create a brand new religion for us to have on this show.
Yeah.
What? Waytheism.
No.
No?
No. No, we don't need to do that.
Did you go to church as a kid? Were your parents practicing?
No, not at all. My parents I wasn't raised religious at all. My mom would go to church sometimes, but that was only to join the choir. My mom loves singing, so she would go.
Yeah, your mom's, big into singing.
She's one of her big passions. So she would just go to church to participate in the commute, like the singing and all that.
Did your dad encourage her singing? Because I know when you were practicing with music, sometimes your dad was less than encouraging to you.
Yeah, my dad would tell me to shut up, like to stop playing anytime I'd fool around with instruments. But
and you recorded one of a great mix of you playing this, and in the background you can hear your dad telling you to shut up,
yelling,
keep it down,
yelling in Chinese. Like, this sounds terrible. Stop, stop. No, my dad wouldn't really encourage my mom. He was a little indifferent to it, but he used to be a singer himself. In fact, that's how he and my mom met.
Really?
Was my dad was training as a youngin to participate in some Pepsi singing contest.
No way.
In Hong Kong at the time. And he knew that my mom was, like, you know, a trained vocal singer. So his move was to ask my mom for help.
Oh,
wink,
wow.
Wink, help.
Wink, wink, wing, wing.
Okay. Yes, that's it.
And that's how they met.
I suppose, yeah.
Wow.
Built off of a...
That sounds like a great Pepsi commercial.
Yes. Yeah.
Long-lasting.
Great taste.
Wow. That's a great story.
Zero calories.
You know, as I think about it now, I don't even know how my parents met. I think what happened was, and strange as it is, they both grew up in Toronto, like 15 minutes apart from one another, but never knew each other, didn't go to the same school or anything. And then they had each of them... one summer had a cottage close to one another, like 2 hours away from the city, and that is where they met, was at...
cottage.
Yeah, at a cottage. Like, and then found out, hey, we live 15 minutes apart. Isn't that weird?
Not weird. A little, yeah, it's a little
That you
weird.
Live so close, and then you have to go, essentially, 2 hours out of the city,
mm-hmm.
and you meet somebody.
That's cute.
What wonderful stories we're sharing.
Yeah.
You should have had one of our parents. We should have had all of our parents on this.
Mm. Maybe next year.
Have your parents ever listened to a podcast?
Never. They don't even know what it is. They don't even know what it is that I do.
My mom doesn't know how to download podcasts, but she listens to The Law religiously every Sunday
really?
Night without fail.
Wow.
It's insane. I've told her. I was like, I can send you the show on Monday or something so you don't have to stay up till 2.
So she must be quite up to date with, I mean, the current product.
I don't think she quite processes what we're actually talking about.
No.
I think we're, like, talking about stocks, you know? It's just...
Still, but I mean, to anybody listening to the show week in and week out every single week, I mean, I think they know something. They know a little bit. Like, if I asked her, hey, who's the top star in the WWE right now? Would she be able to answer?
I think she'd be able to at least recite names that she's heard enough times.
Does she know CM Punk signed with the UFC?
I doubt it. I doubt she would.
Of course she would. Come on.
Well, I'll ask her later tonight at Christmas dinner.
Great.
We'll talk about CM Punk.
Nice.
And perhaps how he's celebrating Christmas. But to me, the most heartwarming thing my mom told me was last year during the ice storm. During the ice storm, where she had no power, and she's telling me this on a Monday, and... their house is, like, no electricity, nothing. She was like, it was terrible. I had to go out into the car to listen to you on the show.
Wow.
I was like, man.
Aww.
Nearly teared up.
That's
I couldn't believe
really
it.
Sweet.
Like, how supportive.
She's there freezing.
In a
freezing.
Car. On a Sunday night at midnight.
Just to listen to
the ice storm is still in full effect in Toronto.
Branches.
Like, this thing was a, like... Last year, that ice storm was crippling the majority of the city.
Catastrophic, yeah.
You were out of power, weren't you?
I was out of power. I was stranded here downtown. It was that night after Elfman.
Oh, that's right.
I was stranded in the office, and I slept over in the office.
Oh.
Actually, I slept over at your house. But
that's
yeah,
right.
Like, trees were toppling over. It was just a war zone here. And here your mom was, basically risking her life, coming out into the car to listen to the sound of her baby's voice.
That's it. Very supportive.
Very, very kind.
Well, maybe your mom's listening to this right now in a car somewhere.
Doubt it.
Maybe she's got her earbud in and she's singing right now.
Even if she were, if she were to listen to it, I think she'd maybe comprehend 5% of the conversation.
I think she'd learn so much about her son that she doesn't know about.
No, it's like I think maybe we're talking too fast for her to comprehend.
Well, she can slow it down on her iPod.
Okay, perhaps. But I'm like that, you know, like, I understand Cantonese when they speak it, but I can't understand it, like, on the news. When they talk Cantonese on the news, it just sounds like gibberish to me, because they talk formally, and it just sounds completely different.
You were doing some What was it, the language specifically, that you were actually going to?
I was trying
to learn with your mom.
I was trying to learn Mandarin. Yeah.
And how did that go? That was like a year or so ago.
I mean, I picked up a little bits and pieces. Mandarin is very similar to Cantonese, but to get good at it, you really do have to practice, and I'd never really had the opportunity.
I feel I could never learn a new language. I think it would be so hard of an undertaking to learn a new language.
I disagree. I mean, I think you're somebody who really gets into what you decide.
I would have to have a real need to learn it. If it was just, all right, I want to learn Spanish for the sake of it.
Here's a relevant theoretical situation. John, we'd like you to commentate New Japan Pro Wrestling.
In Japanese.
In Japanese.
You know, that would be too daunting, because I think the Japanese commentators are phenomenal in New Japan. I could never match that. Never.
Mm.
Much less learn the language to do it. I don't think it would be possible.
Wouldn't that be a nice twist?
Yeah. Do it, bounce out Shinpei Nogami and come in. They would probably hire you. They just assume you could speak Japanese, of course.
Yeah, just speak Japanese.
The funny thing is, I think I could do it just saying whatever. Who's going to criticize me? I won't.
How about the entire Japanese population?
How am I going to know?
Plenty of people are bilingual. Chris Charlton.
I just have to avoid Chris and WH. And other than that, I'm not going to hear any of it. And back home here, wow.
Well,
who knew?
Well, just
who knew?
Can we get a sample of that?
No, because that would be offensive.
As opposed to actually doing it.
It's weird. I've talked about this before. There's certain, countries where you could, mimic how they speak, and it's downright offensive. And then there's others where it's perfectly acceptable. Like if you're, what's that a boot? I'm going to play hockey in Canada.
Well, that's an accent. It's not.
Yeah, it's the way people are born and speak.
How many people alive actually talk that way?
There's a lot of Canadians that have a Canadian accent, and it's very distinguishable.
That is true. We met some of these people ourselves. Okay, but a boot is not something that I've heard anybody say.
I've heard people say that. It's more rare, but people do say it.
Okay, so then is that even a real stereotype then?
It's enough that it's become a stereotype.
Anyway, that's completely different. And often, you know, sometimes when people get offended at a certain thing, it's because there's race attached to it, not just language.
Very true. I'm just saying there's nothing. Okay. Too deep.
Yeah. Too deep for Christmas.
But not too deep for entrant number 5.
Hello?
Oh shit, it's Damian Abraham on Christmas morning.
Happy, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, I guess. Happy holidays, both of you.
Me and Wei are feeling very guilty because we had Alex Greenfield on earlier, and we constantly wished him a Merry Christmas, a man who is Jewish.
Yep.
Is that poor form?
Well, I'm now part of a mixed family because my wife's Jewish.
Oh,
so.
I didn't realize. So what do you say? Do you ever wish your wife a Merry Christmas, or is that considered a bad choice?
Well, even when I was, before I knew her, I always looked at Christmas itself as being kind of a non-denominational holiday, right? Like,
yeah.
John, you would know this as well, being a biblical scholar, much like myself.
Oh, of course.
That they just arbitrarily picked the 25th as Jesus' birthday, right? Like,
it's like the middle of the summer he was born in a field.
Pardon me?
It's, the actual birth, according to legend. Isn't it like sometime in July?
Yeah, that's what I thought too, right? They just picked the winter solstice, like a holiday around the winter solstice, like a Roman festival. So I think we should make Christmas the non-denominational holiday, and then they can have Jesus' birthday in July.
I'm a big Christmas fan. Are
Me
you,
too.
Damien?
Oh, love it. Love it. I love all the tacky trappings of Christmas, the movies, the music. I just think it's a time when you can really lose yourself in commercialism.
I love it all. I love the radio stations that play nonstop Christmas music. I love when Starbucks converts to their Christmas menu.
I heard you talk about that.
To me, it's like people groan when Halloween's over and it's Christmas season. I can't wait. It's my favorite 2 months of the year.
Absolutely. It's like Vegas. You know, like, it might be hard to live there full time, but you only have to be there for a short time, and it's awesome when you're there for a short time.
What is your favorite Christmas song, Damien?
Probably Fuck Christmas by Sia.
Of course.
What is your favorite Christmas song that John and I might have heard of?
Merry Christmas Everybody by Slade, which, you know, you guys probably heard it. They play it in The Office in the Christmas episode. It's like, here's to you, Merry Christmas, everybody, having fun. You know that song?
Of course.
No.
It's a classic. Where do you fall? I think Christmas music, it all comes down to one question, and that is pro or con Mariah Carey. And
oh,
the
con,
Christmas
John.
Song. You are con on that song. Unreal.
Oh, I'm con.
Oh.
John, the
greatest contribution Mariah Carey has provided the world. When they redid it a few years back with Justin Bieber, I thought it was blasphemy. It's my favorite. That is number two to Darlene Love, All Alone on Christmas. That is my favorite Christmas song.
John, I think if you and me were to give each other iPods full of music, it would be the two worst gift exchanges ever.
I don't think you'd talk to me any longer. I think that would be the end result of that. I think it's a wonderful thing that we can have this friendship despite our
exactly.
musical tastes. Like, you and Wei, I think, would just be the best of friends if it was simply...
I'm pro Mariah Carey.
Oh, well, there you go. Wei's on my side in this one.
Well, that's the thing. Wei's like the bridge musically between you and me. He can see both sides of our argument.
Mm-hmm. Wei is the more experimental, I think, of the type. The things that this man listens to, it's...
Oh, no. Yeah, Wei, I would say Wei is one of the most open-minded musically people I've ever met.
Absolutely. And...
Like, Wei would be a hard person to buy. Actually, Wei would be an amazing person to buy a record for. Because as long as you bought him something good in any genre, you could be guaranteed it would get a fair listen.
Lavransky is the worst because there was 1 year I bought him a record, and what a stupid idea because this guy has everything.
Yeah.
And he is the worst to buy anything. I will not buy any music for Lavransky.
Man, not just you, man. Like, I tried to buy him things, and like, he had everything that I bought him. And I thought I bought him some really obscure stuff, and he had everything. So never buy him music.
You tell next time you have to buy a record for Dan, you call in this guy. That Damien, I was schooled listening to his radio show as a young person. I know his taste, and I can find something that not only has he never heard, but I will stake my reputation on, he will like.
You know what I want more than anything in 2015? I want 1 week, me and Wei are going to take the week off, and I want you and Lavransky to do a review of anything. I think
we've
never had the combination of you and Mouth, and I think it's... That would be awesome.
I actually just want these two to like host an actual radio show where you guys like actually play songs.
We used to.
Yeah. Or,
kinda.
What's that?
We used to kinda until the people at the community radio station we were both on tried to lock up the DJs, I should say. I get confused on which media outlet has wronged me. Sorry about the DJ confusion.
It's hard to keep track of them all.
This was CIUT.
Yes. Where all four of us have worked in some capacity over the years. Lavransky, yourself, me, and Wei. We have all worked at CIUT.
I know. That's the thing. It's like, that's a great... CIUT, well, I know. Like, I was talking to Danko Jones recently for a podcast that I do, Turned Out a Punk. A little bit of a plug right there, gentlemen. I'm taking a little bit from the Nate Milton playbook.
Very nice.
And I was talking to him, and he said that he met every cool person he met in his life. You know, pretty much started when he started working at community radio, volunteering at community radio. And it goes to show you, like, here we all are, all products of community radio. Community radio is like an incubator of cool people.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many people, you know, younger than us even listen to the radio anymore. But
It died.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, probably John and myself, we're probably like one of the last generations of people that even, you know, had a radio.
Telling you, man, Christmas, it all comes back to that. The only time of the year I put the radio on in my car, it's Christmas time, and I put it, CHFI, man, nonstop holiday music. And I can't hear any one of those songs enough times. I love it.
I find, like, you know, normally when I hear a pop song,
like more than like three times. I'm like, I hate this song. How do people listen to this? But as long as you have something in that song about reindeers or a sleigh or gifts, I'm okay with hearing it a few times.
Damien, how are you spending Christmas Day? What is what is the big toy this year? Because you are, unlike myself in a way, you have kids.
Yeah. We found out the, Santa Claus, I should say, found out the hard way that if you buy a gift for your child, say, in September, they might not be into that at all.
Oh, no.
Come December.
Ooh.
So,
Santa trying to get ahead of things in the Abraham household.
Yeah.
Not a good idea.
Can you reveal?
Yeah, Santa learned the hard way that, Guardians of the Galaxy Lego looks super cool to a Santa Claus. But if you're a five-year-old little kid, you want Pokemon cards.
Oh,
Way also wants Pokemon cards.
No,
this year.
Are you kidding me? The Guardians Lego all the way.
I know, Guardians of the Galaxy Lego. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, how would you not want this? This is so cool.
Did Santa have a receipt?
No, there was luckily there are when you Santa Claus had Grandpa Santa Claus to give it to. So the Pokemon card could be bought, and then Grandpa Santa Claus can take the hit and give the Guardians of the Galaxy Lego.
Oh, that's nice.
Grandpa Santa Claus is into Lego?
No, give it. No, I don't have to play with himself, but like that way Grandpa Santa Claus can give. Oh, like he's going to be listening to
the podcast. I see.
We gave it to Lauren's dad to give instead.
So, Damien, you had a very busy year. What were some of Damien Abraham's highlights for 2014 beyond guest hosting Review Away, which I know is on a mountain unto itself?
Guest hosting, what's next?
I love doing that. Like, honestly, you guys are joking, but I'm very serious. I had a really fun year. Like, I got to do a lot of stuff. I got to go to Brazil for the first time. Never been to Brazil. Got to...
Wait, what did you eat well in Brazil?
I had the best meal of my life and the worst meal of my life in Brazil. Oh. I had this thing called cachoalé. I'm probably the worst pronunciation ever. And I guess it loosely translates to slave stew.
Mm.
And it was a stew that was eaten you make it twice a week. You only really make it on Wednesdays and Saturdays. I'm probably screwing all this up. But it is incredible. It's like a bunch of different types of meat, beans, eaten on rice. It's insane. And then we went to a steak restaurant. I was only there for 24 hours, so I was only really eat twice. And it was a steak cooked in 2 pints of cream with a stick of butter. A brick of butter.
Oh, my goodness.
And then they fry the steak in that. And then they put a bunch of rice in it. Not that they serve it. And it was really gross.
What?
That was really disgusting.
So you're saying the slave stew was the best one?
Yeah, the slave stew was the best meal, one of the best meals I had in my life.
My God.
And this weird fried milk steak. Like a milk steak.
That sounds delicious to me.
What?
Yeah.
No way. There's also cheese. I've got the cheese, too.
That sounds great. It sounds better than slave stew.
Wait, I think you're just being a contrarian here.
Because no.
You try the slave stew, it'll change your life. But Brazil's amazing. I went to a mall that was just used record stores.
Wow.
In every store. It was awesome. It was like a Brazilian funk, Brazilian metal, Brazilian punk. It was awesome. Tell me who else I went that was really...
What's the Brazilian punk scene like?
Chris, interviewing Chris Jericho. That's incredible.
Hey, when does that come out, by the way?
I have no idea.
Is it already on iTunes as we speak? It could be. I haven't looked, being Christmas Day and all. I haven't checked. But
well,
maybe.
I think Jericho wanted to save this for probably like a Ukrainian or Orthodox Christmas present.
Ah.
So I think it's going to be probably coming closer to January time.
Oh, okay. Well, it's definitely a podcast worth checking out. I think people are going to enjoy it quite a lot.
No. Well, and also I wanted to say, it was about a week ago now that you guys said it, but thank you for all the kind words about that. It means a lot to you guys that you even sat through it, let alone thought it was okay, because I had a lot of fun doing it.
No, you did great, man. You did great. And I think you have an interesting connection with him because you don't know him from the wrestling world. You know him from the music world. And, I mean, he seems to respect you just as much as you seem to respect him.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing. Is we luckily we got along because we the music stuff, because I think that allowed me to kind of like, I don't know, it's weird when you meet someone that does the same job as you, you have like an immediate kind of connection, I find. And that goes in any line of work, you know, like if you meet someone like that does retail and you're like, they can relate to the same experiences you have. So both of us being quote unquote lead singers as our job, it's amazing how much you have in relationship to one another. And then also, I'm a huge fan as well. So, you know, I got to have my relation with him on the music level, and also my geek out fandom on the wrestling level.
Well, Damien, we wish you a Merry Christmas. I hope you hear Mariah Carey till your ears bleed today. And what do you have planned for the new year?
You know what? For the new year, I got like a lot of stuff that I'm kind of looking at doing. I know going to Australia is for sure one of those things in the end of February for the Soundwave tour. Unfortunately, Chris Jericho will not be joining us this time on the tour, sadly for me, because now we'd be totally able to talk all the time about wrestling.
Well, maybe now you'll be that guy to a young, up-and-coming review-away listener who might be in a band, and he's not going to care about any of these guys from Metallica. They're just going to go and say, hey, that's Damien Abraham.
Yeah, but maybe it'll be just like, it'll be probably just like Chris Jericho viewed me, kind of annoying. Like, oh, God, here's some guy that's always talking to me about... You know, I'd be like living your guys' existence. Always just like annoying dudes and bands coming up to you, being like, oh, I'm a big fan of the podcast. I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often. Thanks for dropping by. And
thank you. I'm willing to come by any time and every time.
All right. We'll do a review very soon. We're going to get the Mouth and Damien experience in 2015. That is our goal.
That is a wrestling tag team the world has been waiting for.
All right. Thanks a lot, Damien. We appreciate it. And Merry Christmas.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Way.
Thanks, Damien.
Damien Abraham. A fucked up stopping by.
He does not say a boot.
He does not. He breaks that stereotype and screams it down.
Yeah.
What a big year for Mr. Abraham.
Huge.
All over the world.
But he's so modest about everything.
He's like you.
No, he's way more successful than I am.
You always just downplay yourself. You're very embarrassed by compliments.
I'm not. You can compliment me.
Like, you've been fantastic on this show. Like, just great. You went and just instinctively just shook your head no.
Okay.
Instinctively. I don't think you even planned to do that.
Okay. All right.
Maybe it's a Canadian thing.
Maybe.
I think we tend to be very modest. I'm very...
No, it's an Asian thing, too. It's an Asian thing, too. And with me being Asian and Canadian, I guess it's just compounded.
Oh, boy. You got to work on that. It's a lot of people...
Confucian mentality.
You are a big draw on this show. Sometimes people download this show despite me. You keep them.
I mean, you talk... It's like you're giving me extra compliments so you don't have to get them. You don't have to feel them yourself.
What an interesting psychoanalysis this is.
People must just be so sick of us. Like, just
tough.
Deflecting compliments.
What do they want?
Everybody's screaming at
them. If they downloaded our show,
radio.
Then guess what? You're going to get us.
No, I'm just saying people must be like screaming at the radio. Just take the fucking compliment, you wussies.
I want you to be more cocky next year, and I'll do the same thing. Let's try and develop more... sizable egos.
Gotcha. Okay. That's my resolution.
Okay.
Let's move on with this show. I only have so much time.
Whoa! Easy there.
I'm a very important, busy man who's really good at podcasting, okay? Let's not waste time.
Man. Yeah, this could totally turn people off.
Yeah. Isn't that being cocky?
Well, you can be confident. Confident.
I don't know how to distinguish the two.
Confidence is what I think people latch onto.
Okay. Okay, so that we should be more confident in the new year.
You know who's very confident?
No. Our next guest?
I think so. It's entrance number 6 and 7. A double entry into the Review Away Royal Rumble. The crash of your beach.
recording.
Okay, let's start again. Start again. I'll do. We'll try to do the same. I'll start the same way.
Okay, go ahead.
Hello, ho, ho. Nailed it.
So you see, when we plan things out and Braden gets a few different chances at things, he'll get them right eventually.
Nailed it. Sup, bitches.
Welcome to, no, not even welcome to. We're probably like the first entrant or something because we're so expected. Like, yeah. Of course they're going to have us on their show.
Well, we declared we were going to be in this rumble.
We declared it. So like, we're kind of like the axe and smash. Do you even know what that means, by the way?
I do, but why can't we be a better tag team?
No. But do you know about that rumble? Have you seen it?
It's the one they got, where they were 1 and 2?
Yeah. That's like one of the most legendary moments of the rumble is when Axe, and they did this vignette beforehand where they were pulled, like they were used to have the drum and like pull the actual numbers, right? And do little vignettes for everyone. So Axe or Smash, one of them pulls it and he's like, it's going to be a long night. And the other guy pulls it and is like, yeah, it is. And then sure as shit, Axe and Smash are in the ring first and they're just pounding on one another. And me, everyone who is listening right now, I guarantee you is smiling, thinking about that Royal Rumble moment. I would rank that up there as one of the top memorable Royal Rumble moments of all time.
I'm going to have to say John Cena coming back.
That was great. I remember we all jumped off our chairs when that happened. That was super surprising. And then they did it with, what was it, Edge the next year or 2 years later? Edge wasn't supposed to be back, and they surprised everyone with Edge?
Yep, or Vince McMahon hurting his leg. or us in the Review Away Christmas special. What's next, miss?
What's next, miss? Oh, because of the X.
It's Nexmas. It works.
All right.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
We've
Happy
taken
New
enough
Year.
Time, yeah. Back to John and Wade.
I love you all.
This is their show, not
Continue
ours.
Continue on. Keep on keeping on.
All right. Goodbye. Merry whatever.
That was Jason Agnew and Braden Harrington.
Mm-hmm.
A breakout performer this year in 2014.
Oh, yeah. Most improved. Or actually, no, he wins breakout.
And a man that took your vacancy on the panel this year for the best of and this Sunday for the worst of picks.
Pretty much, like, choked me out and just, like, left me in the corner.
He kind of was Johnny Hendricks to your George St. Pierre. You vacated the title
so,
to get your mind right. And you did it at an appearance at a mall.
What? Oh, man, that is going to be so, like, inside. Like,
no, it's not.
It is for our audience. They don't know that George St. Pierre announced his retirement in a mall.
Yes, they do. You just said it.
I don't even... Okay. Yeah, anyway. No, I thought Braden did an awesome job. Braden did a great job. And for those of you asking, I didn't watch enough this year to really give my best or worst of, so I decided to step out.
How many pay-per-views did you watch this year? WWE shows, besides WrestleMania, you attended.
I watched
the Rumble.
I watched a few, but I didn't watch every match, you know? I'd always just, like TLC, for instance, I watched the notable events on the show. Probably SummerSlam, I'd probably watch, you know, the standout matches too. I'll always try to catch the standout matches, but I won't sit through a whole show.
What wrestling do you look forward to watching?
If there's a big match, like if there's a big main event, then I look forward to it. I'm actually looking forward to watching the to Wrestle Kingdom.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll see if you have the same answer at 4 a.m.
Yeah, we'll see. But anything that's kind of new and unique and like that ROH New Japan show, I was really looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. They're going to do those again in May of next year.
Anything good is the answer.
Well, that's kind of the reason with Review Away is that we can pick anything to watch, and there's lots out there that can be both good and bad, and I can enjoy both.
Yeah.
It's the ones that are suddenly I'm looking at my watch and wondering, God.
The boring ones.
The boring ones are typically the ones we want to avoid. Unfortunately, sometimes we can't on Monday nights.
Mm.
Those can be a chore.
Mm.
Have 3-hour Raws become any easier for you?
Yeah, they have. Definitely. I mean, after doing them for like 2 years now, yeah.
I find that, especially over the last couple of months, there is a sizable amount that is dedicated to recap and like senseless entrances that you can
skip.
You can really have raw viewing down to a science and watch it in a, I won't say normal amount of time, but a more manageable amount of time.
But you know, even without a PVR, I think you can enjoy raw because there's so much gap in between. Like Twitter, I think is great, you know, to be able to take your breaks in between and like just go on Twitter or maybe even tweet something yourself. And that's when you're only watching live. Or you can be in the middle of like making a dinner or building a puzzle or maybe making a paper boat. You could be in the middle of doing any of those things while you just have wrestling in the background. It's not such a bad thing at all.
There's always things you can do. I cannot watch the thing live. There's no way. I have to start like an hour or so in. And once I catch up and I'm live and there might be 40 minutes left, that's a bad sign on my part that I've misjudged my viewing.
Do you have you ever considered taking notes for any other shows that you watch?
No, not if I don't have to talk about it after. Oh, okay. But that's what I do for wrestling and MMA.
Sometimes, though, like, you know, when you take notes, it just, you happen to, you can digest something a lot.
100%. 1,000%. Yeah. I agree.
So you never, like, watch Dallas and take notes?
No, because I have no need to. What am I going to do with this?
Just for an appreciation of the show.
Hey, I'm sure I would, if I was a movie reviewer and... I'll tell you, for Foxcatcher, for instance, that was a movie I knew I had to talk about afterwards for that National Post deal. So I watched that much more intentively than...
Yeah, you didn't plug that at all. You should...
I posted a link.
Tell people...
It wasn't a huge deal.
Tell people where they can catch your review of Foxcatcher.
Go Google Foxcatcher popcorn panel on the National Post site. I think it was in the newspaper as well. I'm not quite sure. But... anyway, so I did that, and yeah, I think anytime you know that you're going to be discussing something and needing to retain certain information, you're going to be more invested and paying closer attention than typically. I go to a movie and I kind of just sit back and I take it in, and I'll remember the key points, and if it's a very good movie, I'll remember more.
Do you think you'll ever get to the point where you won't need to take notes and you can just take notes mentally in your brain?
And I hope.
Still do such a good job.
That'd be great. You know, I wish I could have a 3D printer that could print out just, you know, my thoughts after a movie.
Actually, I've experimented sometimes taking notes with Siri. Like, I'll hold down the button. Not even really Siri, just to hit the microphone and just be like, Jack Swagger looks really good. And then it'll write it down for me.
And just puts it into your notes?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good... handy tool. I never use my voice recorder on my phone.
It sounds really awkward, though. What was I going to say? Jay-Z doesn't write down. Like, you'd be like Jay-Z. He doesn't write down any of his lines.
Really?
It's all mental. That's how Biggie used to do it.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. Do you have a further respect for that style as opposed to sitting down and writing something so that you can ensure quality?
I mean, for him, I think it just shows how, I don't know, how gifted he is to be able to just store all that up in there. Like, it's not like he doesn't write. I'm sure he still writes. It's just like he's able to write it all down in his brain.
Wow. Did you ever read his book?
Jay-Z?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know he had one.
He came out with one a year ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I heard it was very good, but I never read it.
No.
We are more than midway through, and our next entrant...
They're all still in there and still in the ring.
It's filling up. It's who is going to emerge.
Braden and Jay, there's... Uh-oh. Are we going to see...
Jay's on the floor talking to fans right now.
leaving Braden to get...
Braden is getting destroyed right now by Greenfield, Helwani, and Brian Mann. Oh, and Mouth is not coming to his aid either. He seems to be chatting with Jay as well. But now, I think the field is going to get a lot more intense as we've got our next entrant who might start clearing this ring out.